This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Mike Brennan.
Your old buddy Matt Rausch.
And you're listening to the, what are we on, 24th
yes.
episode of M Squared TechCast.
That's almost half a year. That's pretty amazing.
Oh, gosh, and we're still in business. We have a pretty packed show today. We're going to be starting off with Michelle Grinnell from Travel Michigan, who's on hold here. She's listening. Then we're going to go to Tom Kelly, who is the COO, Chief Operating Officer at Automation Alley. He's going to talk about the new Automation Alley report that came out a week ago, I believe it was, right? He's nodding his head, so I guess I got that right. And then we're going to have calling in from Philadelphia from Comcast Business, Kathy Hickey, who is the Executive Director of Marketing for Comcast. She's going to talk about the Innovations for Entrepreneur contest, followed by Matt's old boss, Rich Homburg.
Yeah. Of course, I think he's pretty brilliant. He did hire me after all.
I was thinking the same darn thing, you know. So at DPTV, he's going to talk about an event that's coming up Friday that involves STEM education for young women.
And we have talked about this before with other folks. It's a terrific program called the STEMinista Project. It's trying to sort of turn around the abysmal numbers of girls in IT and tech careers.
There you go. Well, let's start off with Michelle Grinnell. Now, I guess it was a week or so ago when news came out that the big contract for the redevelopment of the Pure Michigan website went to a Florida company. And Matt and I talked to a lot of people who are not real excited about that. So we wanted to give you the chance to explain why that happened.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on and then having a chance to hopefully add a little bit of information to the conversation. And one of the things that I do want to point out that while the contract is with Miles Media, part of their proposal that they brought to us was a partnership with 26 Digital based here in Michigan, in Brighton. So there is a Michigan company that will be working very closely and as a major part of this project. They will be our day-to-day contact. They will be very involved in developing kind of the analytics and what we're doing with the site. And Miles Media is bringing some other great assets to the table, including their workforce, their work capacity. They have over 200 staff. And the fact of the matter is this project is a huge undertaking. We have so much content on Michigan.org. We are working on a very aggressive timeline. And so one of the things that was really important as we were going through this RFP process, which hopefully we can talk about a little more in depth, is the capacity to meet our timelines with the massive amount of work that really needs to be done to build a website of this size from the ground up.
Yeah, Michigan.org, this is Matt Rausch, by the way, hi. Michigan.org was the nation's number one state tourism website for an awful lot of months and years running. I haven't heard you talking about it that much lately, which tells me that it's probably not now the number one state tourism website. Is that part of the reason you're doing this?
Well, it has continued to be the number one state tourism website in terms of traffic. But what we received is a lot of feedback from the consumers that our website was really great if you knew exactly where you were going in Michigan. So if you knew you wanted to go to Traverse City, you could get a lot of great information. But so much of our marketing efforts and advertising are enticing people from outside of Michigan to come to the state. You know, they would get to the website and say, I don't know the difference between Traverse City and Alpena and Muskegon. And so they would kind of get stuck. And so we're really kind of transitioning. This year is actually the 10th year of the Pure Michigan campaign. It's our 10-year anniversary. And we're kind of evolving that campaign into more interest-based marketing. So we know people who go on vacations like to do what they're passionate about, biking, kayaking, car culture. And so helping them find the interests that they can do in Michigan and then funneling them down to the specific destinations. And so our website right now is not designed to do that. This new website, that's one of the key things that we're looking for. So this is really a redesign. This is a whole new website from the ground up that we're looking to build.
What sort of timeline do you think? Are we talking 6 months, less, more?
We're hoping to have this done by the beginning of next year, which, again, I think for a lot of people that seems like a really long timeline. But for how much content we have on the site and the different purposes that this site serves, that's a very aggressive timeline. And I'll be honest, some of the proposals that we got from some of the Michigan companies that bid, they had great concepts, they had great designs, but they just did not have the capacity to get it done in a timeline that worked on our schedule.
Was that the big deciding factor? Because I hope it wasn't just the lowest bidder, because I know that's how government works.
No, it absolutely wasn't the lowest bidder. And I can say that Miles was not the highest bidder and they were not the lowest bidder. And frankly, we don't even look at the price proposals until the final round. So there was only three bids that we even looked at the price proposals for. The evaluation is done without knowing the price so that folks can the Joint Evaluation Committee can really pick which one serves our needs the best. And frankly, unless it's a key part of their proposal, we wouldn't even know for sure if it's a Michigan company or a non-Michigan company. It's not something that we call out in the RFP. So, you know, one of the things that Miles brought was experience in the travel industry. It was critical to us that the vendor know the industry, understand the industry, understand how leisure travel consumers plan their trips, use websites, things like that. So they really brought that to the table in a way that no other company that bid on this did. They're nationally recognized. They've got more than 90 clients all across the country. They work with Brand USA, who we work with on our international marketing efforts. So that was a huge component, is they just had a proven track record on a national scope of developing this sort of website, and that's absolutely what we're trying to do. We are making Pure Michigan and Michigan a national travel destination, and so we needed that experience and expertise as part of this proposal.
I noticed that I think it was 12 companies were in the process. I don't know whether any of those 12 companies from Michigan were in the process. Yep. Were any of them finalists?
Yes, we did have a Michigan company in the finalists, and like I said, this is, you know, we have the utmost respect, and there were some great ideas that came from the Michigan companies, and we want to continue to work with our Michigan industry to, A, get some learnings from them. What about the RFP process did they find challenging so that we can do a better job next time around? And there will be future RFPs. I mean, just keep in mind that this is not a one-and-done situation. We're always RFPing different projects, both here at MADC and all of state government, but also to kind of give them feedback to say, okay, here are the places that your proposal was very strong. Here are the places that, you know, you may want to work on so the next time you can submit a stronger proposal. Because certainly we would always love to have a Michigan company, but our ultimate goal has to be to have the best possible product available so that we can continue to drive leisure travel here in the state.
Describe what's going to happen with the new website. Why is it such a big endeavor? What is it going to do? Are you going to obviously have video would be a big feature, I would assume, right? Yeah.
Yeah, video will be a key component. I think one of the things right now that the website is lacking, you know, you see these beautiful Pure Michigan ads, and then you come to Michigan.org and the experience, there's a little bit of a jarring experience. It's not the same kind of emotive feeling experience. So we want it to be a little bit more in line with what we're doing on all of our other marketing efforts. Again, getting to that kind of interest and passion based as opposed to destination based. You know, and there's a lot of things we're still going to kind of have to work out and tweak. Video will be a big part of it. And I think, as you guys know, that's the interesting and challenging part of this is technology changes so quickly that you're constantly trying to keep up. And we've done a great job of being an early adapter, and I think that has helped led to our success. But if you think about it, 10 years ago when Pure Michigan was launching, barely any social media was out there, and now that's a huge component. And how the digital world has changed in the last 10 years, you know, we have to kind of try to anticipate where that's going. And again, that's something that Miles brings to this contract is some insights and the research that we can tap into so we can actually look ahead and be ahead of the curve.
So roughly how much of the work will this Brighton company be doing? Do we know that yet?
You know, I don't have an exact breakdown, but again, it is, they will be involved with us on a day-to-day basis, and 26 Digital has a great reputation in the travel sector, both here in Michigan and beyond. They've been doing this for 25 years. So I think that we're excited to be working with them, and I think that it's important to recognize that that was always part of this proposal, and it's kind of getting lost in the debate that there is a Michigan company working on this, and Miles and 26 Digital have worked together, so it's not just kind of this one-off token company, but they're really going to bring some added value to this project, and we're all going to work very collaboratively on it.
Have either of those companies done other state tourism websites?
Yes. Yep. Miles has done Colorado's. They've worked with Visit California. They've worked on New Zealand. Like I said, they've worked with more than 90 DMOs and hospitality businesses. So they both have a lot of experience, and that's important to us. It's like any other industry. There's certain cultures, there's certain language, there's all of those things. It's nice to have, it's important for us to have someone that is up on that and can hit the ground running and is not having to learn a new industry from the ground up.
So what in your feedback, in your focus grouping or whatever it was you were doing, what did your clients, the tourists coming to Michigan, say that they wanted in this new and enhanced website?
Just to make it a little more intuitive to how people search, you know, we do also have a lot of content on the site. A lot of it's quite frankly probably out of date, so this gives us an opportunity to kind of start fresh. It's a behemoth of a website, and there's a lot of great content there, but it takes a little bit of digging sometimes. So that user interface was a big one, and that frustration with if you didn't know where you already wanted to go in Michigan, we didn't really help you narrow it down at all. So that's going to be a huge focus on our efforts moving forward. Is kind of creating this funnel. So you want to bike. Okay, what kind of biking? Do you like mountain biking? Do you like slow roll? What do you want to do in the evenings? And kind of filtering people down, and at the end of their process, they've got a list, a manageable list of destinations in Michigan where they can do those activities.
Well, certainly if you need a really great technology news feed, I know where you can get one that put up on that website. I have a really good one, so... I'll mention that. You know, I want to throw that in there. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, my shameless plug. Yes, yes.
We have a bell that is,
hey, we're here for it.
Yeah, we have a bell that is dinged here whenever somebody plugs their own employer. So in Mike's case, though, that's pretty much all the time because his employer is himself.
Yes, so. Yes, always plugging myself. All right, so I mean, all these people. I mean, trust me when I say I got a lot of people contacting me, and I know Matt did, and they were...
Well, and it was, for me, it was interesting, sorry, Mike, that I had, you know, both kinds of responses, I've heard both responses, that they can't believe you got them to do this for $400,000 and that it's too expensive. So I guess, you know, maybe it's right since we got both kinds of responses.
Like Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Yeah, maybe.
Just right.
Just right. Yeah, and again, it is important for people to know, I think, that we have the utmost respect for the industry. We know that they're doing great things. We want to continue to work with them. This really came down to our RFP process, which is the process that we as the state of Michigan have to follow, and we have to go based on the proposals that we received and which proposals best meet the needs that we laid out in the RFP. And I should mention our evaluation committee included folks outside of MEDC and Travel Michigan. It included folks with the Department of Management and Budget. It included folks in the tourism industry. And unanimously, they voted or scored this proposal as the top proposal of the bunch that we received. So there was a lot of due diligence. This wasn't a rash decision. There was a lot of thought that went into it. It was a very deliberate decision.
Unfortunately, we're out of time in this segment. We've been listening to Michelle Grinnell, who's a spokesman. Probably got a better title than that, right? Are you like a vice president or something? Or we can
only
promote
in my
you.
Dreams.
Okay, you're promoted. You're now vice president at Travel
Perfect.
Michigan. There we go. I'll talk to your boss. And she's been talking about the new Travel Michigan website that's in development, and that we will see about a year from now, give or take.
Yeah, we'd love to be back on and show it off.
Okay, sounds great. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
And we have in studio Tom Kelly, a longtime friend of ours from Automation Alley.
Well, maybe he's a friend of yours. I don't know.
Well, hey, he's a friend of everyone's out there, you know? He just recently, a year ago, was promoted to Chief Operating Officer.
Oh, cool.
Whoa, that, and that 50 is a cool. cents will get you a cup of coffee, right?
Yeah, that is cool.
I think you're right.
Yep.
Reporting to a real good friend of ours, Ken Rogers. Yep. Gosh, I've known Ken forever.
Yep.
Automation Alley, about a week ago, actually,
It was a week ago, Monday.
Yes. Yeah. Came out with the annual report and talked about where Automation Alley is vis-a-vis Silicon Valley. And one of the things I want to get to right away was when I was on Internet Advisor on Saturday, one of the things Gary Baker asked me about, and I was uncertain. He thought it was just a survey of Michigan businesses, and I said, I don't know. So go ahead and clear that up right
question.
Away.
Yeah, you hit me with that the very first question when we walked in the studio here, so I appreciate it. So, when we conducted this survey, the first thing we wanted to do was to make sure it was real, that we were after the truth, not after some PR soundbite. If it had been terrible, this wouldn't have seen the light of day. What we did was we interviewed 70 executives in IT and technology businesses in Southeast Michigan, and we interviewed the same number in Silicon Valley, and we did not tell them why we were doing the survey. It was just a survey of questions about how do you keep and grow talent? How optimistic are you about growing revenue this year? What are you doing to build your business? How do you like your area in terms of being able to grow your revenue? So it was a very fair appraisal of what's going on in Southeast Michigan and Silicon Valley. And what came out of the study was that people in Southeast Michigan are extremely optimistic about their businesses. Mm. We were floored by that. It was just a wonderful study.
Indeed. And one of the things that came up was the ROI in the sense of how less expensive. And I know this from having lived in California myself 20 years ago and how expensive it was then. It's nothing compared to what it is now. I mean, a studio apartment, $3,000 a month in the Valley, right?
Absolutely. Before I was at Automation Alley and before that, the state of Michigan, I had done a series of startups myself building technology businesses. And during that time, I built them all here in Southeast Michigan. I used to go out to California because we had a lot of work to do with Silicon Valley. And the programmers that were there were, 8 to 10 to an apartment. And they called that quality of life. And over here, I have my own house in Royal Oak that I paid a quarter of what someone would pay out in Silicon Valley. I never understood that equation that people didn't appreciate the quality of life here and the things you're able to do.
Well, how do you, when you come up with these reports about the quote-unquote technology industry in Michigan, what businesses do you put in there? How do you define a technology business here?
So a technology business is somebody that's in information technology, or they're in digital design, or they're in advanced manufacturing, or they're in these kinds of industries that require STEM degrees, right? So if you start right at the K-12 and on to college level, science, technology, engineering, and math, it's those industries that we focus on. And those are the industries going forward that the world is going to compete for that talent. And that's going to be very a 20-year arc as it plays out, that those STEM degrees, and everybody wants them. And by the way, from this study, I think you'll see that Southeast Michigan, last year we graduated over 9,300 science, technology, engineering, and math degrees. Mm. Silicon Valley graduated less than about half that amount, a little over 5,000. That's a great competitive advantage. We need to beat our chest and say, you know what? We're graduating a ton of people. What we need to do is keep them here.
Yeah, that's the big issue.
We got to keep them here.
How are you going to keep them down on the farm, So they get the bright lights of Chicago attracts them or some other places like that. Mm-hmm. Of course, Chicago is very expensive too.
Right. Well, that's what's the beauty of Detroit coming back so strong. Detroit, millennials want that urban core. They want that urban experience. And with Detroit coming back, not only can they get that experience, but they can make a difference. Mm-hmm. If you go to Chicago, you're just a little drop of water in a great big Lake Michigan. If you're in Detroit, you can make an impact day two. The first day you find where the washrooms are, the second day you make an impact and move the needle. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful place to be right now if you're a young person.
We just need to get some more apartments downtown and affordable for that matter, because I'm told, I haven't looked into it, but a couple $1,000s a month to rent downtown now, is that right?
I think you're right, and I think it's going to mess up our cost of living and quality.
Yes, we're going to take a look at that next year.
Well,
right?
maybe it'll help some of those inner ring suburbs too. You know, that could be one thing.
I live in an inner ring suburb, yeah, and I'm happy to be there.
Yeah, right. I'm in Dearborn. Where are you?
I'm in Huntington Woods, just up the road.
Oh, just you can walk home from here. Okay,
that's
anyway,
right.
Okay.
But, yeah, you got to stop feeding me those beers.
Okay, but I'll bet you go back to the office.
yeah, I will.
Okay, and no, he hasn't actually had any beer. We're just joking about that here.
Thank you for that. 21, you know, unless Kenny's not drinking. Ken,
just
don't
in
worry.
Case Ken's listening. Yeah, that was for Ken Rogers' yeah. benefit.
I think you're right.
But the number of jobs I would imagine. Here that are quote-unquote high-tech that are in advanced manufacturing is greater than the percentage in Silicon Valley, right? I mean, it's just a slightly different way of looking at technology.
That's right. Well, you know, it's certainly that's the case in the automotive industry. There's lots of engineers and lots of those kinds of STEM degrees around that industry. I don't have the statistics to support what's happening in the IT field. IT, the last I heard was there actually were more IT people working in Southeast Michigan than there were in Silicon Valley.
Well, and a lot of that has to do with the auto industry as well.
Correct.
But it's not the kind of traditional metal bending, you know, operation that you think of as being the auto industry. There is so much embedded software, so much you know, involved in telematics and infotainment in cars now. When Bill Gates said, what was that, 15, 18 years ago, that the car is going to become just another spot on the network, you know, Detroit right. laughed at him, but it's come true.
Nigel Francis, back when he was the car czar for the state of Michigan, he had an interesting stat. He talked about how there are 32 million lines of code now in a vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
32 million lines of code, and all of it has to talk to everything else. And by the way, it can never fail.
Right, exactly.
It's not like you can't reboot your car going down the highway. A phone, it starts to act funny. You turn it off. It gets a software update overnight. And, you know, how many times do you get a software update on your phone? You hardly even think about it anymore.
Right.
A car, it has to always work, and it has to be fail-safe. So that's the disconnect. People kind of discount how serious it is to get under the hood of a car and start to do that code.
Well, the only code updates I've gotten on my car is I've got a Ford with the sync system in it. Mm-hmm. Every so often I do get a software update, so the radio won't work. Everything else works, though, thankfully. So, but just for a few minutes while it's updating the software, the radio is not functioning.
He can't listen to his heavy metal for a while, yeah. Yeah. So it'll be okay, man. Just don't bang your head on the dash.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. That's right. All that so, death metal.
Right, yeah, right. That's it. So what are the hot jobs here? I'm looking at your report now. Advanced automotive, I guess, yeah?
Oh, advanced automotive, IT, anything related to STEM, mm-hmm. you can get a job in Southeast Michigan.
In my former employer, the Engineering Society of Detroit, you know, obviously they've got like 140 corporate members, mm-hmm. and those people are constantly screaming, yelling, you know, bring us engineers. I could put 10 electrical engineers to work today. I could put 10 software engineers to work today. And there are, you know, over 100, you know, probably half of those 140 companies are involved in the transportation industry somehow or other.
So,
and they're not hiring, you know, for what you would consider traditional factory jobs. They're hiring high-tech, high-pay, you know, requiring a college degree and maybe even a master's sometimes.
Right.
Those kinds of jobs.
You're right. And so that's why it's our job to tell the story. You know, Automation Alley, it's our job to tell the story that Southeast Michigan is a great place to be a STEM degree completed person and to get a job. This is the place you want to be. Mm-hmm. We're trying to tell that story. You know, one of the things that came out of this technology report, we interviewed, like we said, a bunch of people in Silicon Valley. We interviewed a bunch of people here in Southeast Michigan. 99% of the people we interviewed in Southeast Michigan, these are all business owners in the technology field or high-level managers in bigger companies, 99% predicted revenue growth. Mm-hmm. Every single company predicted they're going to grow revenue this year. That stat floored me because I thought somebody lost business somewhere.
Yeah, sounds like
somebody got fired.
Sounds like Lake Wobegon. Yeah, every kid is above average.
And here's the better stat that we didn't release. 25% of those predicted revenue growth higher than 15%. So if those numbers are to be believed, we're in for a great 2016.
Yeah.
Holy cow, I can't believe those kinds of numbers.
But I guess the fact that it's hard to find STEM-type professionals is not hindering growth here then, obviously? Yes?
Well, we're certainly graduating a lot of them, so I hope that they're on the campuses of our neighbor institutions here recruiting like crazy. Because like you guys have brought up, when I'm out talking to Tier 1 CEOs, which my job allows me to do, they all talk about the same thing. There's two things that keep them up at night, talent and innovation. So I hear it time and time again. Where am I going to find the talent, and how do we make sure that we don't get blindsided by innovation?
That second one's a toughie, because there's somebody somewhere working on something that's very disruptive, and you don't know when it's going to come and how bad it's going to be.
Well, and this report is about making sure that as the car becomes more intelligent, and as it moves towards autonomous driving, we have to make sure that our region stays the dog and not the tail in the ultimate outcome. Everybody says, well, it's not Detroit versus Silicon Valley. It's Detroit and Silicon Valley. And I say, yes, to a point. I am happy if it turns out that we're in partnership, but it's Detroit on stage with special guest Silicon Valley. If it goes the other way, we're in trouble as a region. They have more money than we have. They have money to slosh around. We have to be careful, we have to be quick, and we have to have a sense of urgency. And I don't want to be a Nokia or a BlackBerry at the end of the day, because it'll devastate our region.
They have venture funds that are over $1 billion, and I think our biggest ones around 200 or so million. So big difference.
Big difference. They have venture funds that are bigger than the market cap of GM, probably.
Probably, yes, yes. Mark Andreessen and company, right?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Well, the venture situation here has gone from awful to mediocre, I think. We've successfully gotten there, and hopefully it'll continue to get better.
Yeah, it's come a long ways in 15 years or so.
Yep, absolutely.
I think, though, we are unfortunately running out of time in this segment. I'm looking at Jessica. Yes? She's nodding.
Guys. Close.
So we're close. So we've had Tom Kelly here.
I could do my soft shoe.
Okay, that would be good. Yeah. Yeah. We've had Tom Kelly, the Chief Operating Officer at Automation Alley. And give the quick, how do I get in touch with me kind of thing. Give them your email address, the web address.
Absolutely. It's automationalley.com is our web address. You can reach me at Kelly T, K-E-L-L-Y-T, at automationalley.com. We'd love to hear from everybody. We want everybody to be a part of the solution. And the region is Automation Alley.
Okay.
And I'm Mike Brennan.
And I'm Matt Rausch. And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast this segment. Our next segment, we're going to be talking with Comcast Business Kathy Hickey about a cool contest for entrepreneurs. Stick around. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with the M Squared TechCast.
And you, well, we have calling in from Philadelphia from Comcast Business, Kathy Hickey, who is the Executive Director of Marketing. She's going to be talking to us about, actually, I published this, I want to mention, Kathy, by the way, when I posted that story, I don't know, a week or so, maybe 2 weeks ago, it's already received 600 or 700 people that have viewed it, clicked on it. So there's a lot of interest in that area. And what is the interest in is in Comcast Business's Innovations for Entrepreneur contest, where if you can explain in 250 words or less in an essay why technology would enhance your business, you can win what, up to $30,000, right?
That's correct.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the contest? And I know the deadline is coming up, so we need to talk about that too.
We do. Deadline is on March 12th. So we put this program together for both entrepreneurs and startups in order to help fund their technology, because technology is really helping propel businesses. So as you mentioned, a 250-word essay where you explain how you would use technology to take your business to the next level gets you in the running to be one of the winners in the Michigan area. So there would be one startup winner and one entrepreneur winner, and each would win $10,000. And then you would compete for the grand prize, which is an additional $20,000 plus a trip to Philadelphia to meet with an amazing group of experts that will help you to take that plan and really put it into execution. So that would mean that your total would be $30,000 plus this trip, and there are 6 grand prize winners across the country.
And I think we had a Michigan finalist. I'm not sure if it was last year or the year before, right?
A grand prize winner?
No, a finalist. I guess that would be a grand prize winner. I know I wrote a story, it seems like a year ago, where I interviewed somebody who had won the $30,000.
Yes, and their name is escaping me.
Well, I'm just encouraging folks out there that, yes, it can happen, right?
Even here. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what do you, what are the finalists, the winners, that sort of thing, when the grand prize winners, what sort of technologies are they developing?
Well, that's what's so fascinating, because a lot of people think, oh my gosh, it's going to be the millennials with their apps, and it's really not. Last year, you know, our grand prize winners were a pretty eclectic group, where we had a consignment shop who was using technology to show what they had in stock and to manage their inventory. We had a school for twice exceptional children that was using technology to help these children who learn differently than other children. And that woman was able to actually open a second school with the funding that she got. We had a physical therapy practice who wanted to make their patient experience better, and a camp that was doing more technology with their students. So people are using it to just make their businesses better and improve the customer experience.
What does Comcast Business get out of this? What's the reason you're doing this?
Well, Comcast in general is really dedicated to the entrepreneur space and has a lot of initiatives across the board in order to help foster businesses, both entrepreneurs and startups. But, you know, we obviously want to get to know these businesses and have them become part of our world. And we like to talk to them and find out what they're looking for, and so that we can make better products for them.
When is that deadline again? When do folks have to have their essay done? I know it said March 12th, you said?
March 12th.
Tell me a little bit about the industries that have been represented by past winners.
It has been across the board. We've had, as I mentioned, we had a couple of schools. We've had consignment shops. We've had knitting stores, veterinarians. We had contractors who wanted to do an app so that when people are renovating their homes, they know what's happening. That was the Michigan person right there.
Yeah, I think it was, now that you mentioned.
It was. He's great. And, you know, so it's really across the board. And it's there are some high tech, but for the most part, they're regular businesses that see the value of technology and investing in technology to help their businesses grow.
And once they get to Philadelphia, besides getting the big check, I guess, well, that's very nice to get $30,000, but probably the advice they're going to get from this panel of experts is worth at least that, right?
It is, and this year we're really beefing it up. Last year we had 5 experts. We'll probably have between 12 and 15 experts, and we're going to cover areas like financials, business planning, operations and technology, growth strategies, marketing strategies. Mm. So we're really going to give them, I've heard one of our winners put it that it was an MBA in a day, where it's really pretty intense. They learn a lot, but it's very specific to their business.
So going beyond that, do you give them a lot of publicity for the winners, or so they get national exposure?
They do get lots of national exposure because we make a video where they tell their story, and we promote that on our social media. But we also use them for years to come. We're still using our past 2 years' worth of winners when we do entrepreneur webinars and panels and testimonials and case studies and really just any thought leadership stories where we're looking for people who have used technology. We bring them into that so that they can tell their story over and over again.
So can you tell me a little bit about how you develop the rubric for, you know, who the winners are going to be?
So it's really based on, there's a few off the top of my head. I cannot remember them exactly because really the lawyers took care of all that. There's a criteria on, you know, how creative it is, how complete it is, and, you know, whether it's doable, those types of things. And don't quote me exactly on that. All of it is in the rules if somebody does want to look it up. But and then it goes to our judges, and the judges will rate it based on those criteria. And then whoever ranks the highest will win.
And the judges, who are those folks?
The two judges are Anita Campbell and John Jantz, who are both very prominent in the SMB world.
Okay, let's give the folks out there listening, and then that'll be listening on demand, let's give them that information where that website is so they can dial in and get that essay in, excuse me. Well, I imagine an application too, right?
It's very short, so it's really easy to enter, so definitely reach out and do it. It's cbcommunity.comcast.com/i4e.
One more time, just so that they're probably writing frantically.
It's a tough one. It's CB Community, as in Comcast Business Community, cbcommunity.comcast.com/i4e.
So now, any of these companies that, and this is the, is it the fourth year or the fifth year? How many years?
It's the third year.
Third year. Okay, I knew it was somewhere in that area. Have any of them received any kind of angel or venture capital funding?
I actually don't know the answer to that.
Okay, and when it comes to that long, involved URL, folks, don't worry. We're going to put it on the show website. Right?
Yes, we will. Yeah, definitely, okay. Definitely. We'll link to the story that appears at MI Tech News as well.
Yeah, so. And once you've been doing this for a while, I would think it'd be interesting to sort of do a study on, you know, how this worked out for people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So you're looking for people who want to use technology in sort of innovative ways, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you give me another example besides the one company from Michigan that you mentioned?
So we had a veterinarian that wanted to spend more time with her pets. And so she did some automation and automated their patient records and things like that and brought them onto the website. So the patient's parents, if you want to call the pet's owners.
Fur baby owners, yes.
Had more visibility, and that meant she could spend more time with her animals, which meant that, you know, it was a win-win all the way around.
Hmm. That's cool. So how many folks apply for this? I mean, overall, nationally, what sort of numbers are we looking at?
So we don't divulge the exact numbers, but it's many thousands.
Many thousands. Wow, it's got to be a mountain of work to go, because you got to read every one of these essays, right? I mean, is there like,
absolutely,
before you get to the judges, are there like screeners that read the essays to make sure they cover all the points they're supposed to cover? Or how do you wade through all those?
There is somebody who screens to make sure they're complete, and then they go to the judges for review.
Is there any kind of pointers or guidance you can offer for folks that want to get involved in this? Because, you know, I write for a living, Matt writes for a living, but most people don't. So 250 words might be a bit daunting, even something like we probably knock off at about 10 minutes. But, I mean, we do this for a living. They don't. So what would you say to folks that, you know, how can you coach them a little bit?
Well, I would say that, first of all, enter, because a lot of the people who won said, I never thought I would win. So enter. That's the first thing. Second is really think about what, if you could do anything, what would you want to do? Because this has given you an opportunity to do that thing that you always wanted to but couldn't quite figure out how. So know that you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to have the idea. And then the funding will help you go get the answers. So be creative. Think outside the box. Think about what you really want to do and get a little passion into it. And then, you know, get that passion into your 250 words. If it's your business, you love it, get that into your 250 words.
So this isn't something where you have a concept and, gosh, you'd like to start a business. This is for folks that have a business and want to use technology to make it better.
Right. And I use the example of our woman in California with her twice exceptional school. She was able to get another school and to get all of the technology she needed to help these children. But she couldn't have done that without the funding.
Mm. Great. All right. Well, we're running out of time, I guess, running down here. So one more time, it's Kathy Hickey calling in from Philadelphia. But I guess that's where Comcast is based, right? Philadelphia?
It is.
And she's Comcast Business, excuse me. And she's the executive director of marketing. We've been talking about, the Innovations for Entrepreneur Contest, which nationally is $440,000, if I recall from the story I wrote. So that's a pretty large number.
Yep.
And so you get a chance as a business to get at least $10,000 of that if you're, the state winner. And if you go on to be the grand prize winner, $30,000. But again, although $30,000 is nothing to sneeze at, the idea that you can be talking to all these folks who can really take your business to another level, that's priceless, right?
That's right.
Okay. And once again, that website is cbcommunity.comcast.com/I4E with a numeral 4.
And this is Mike Brennan.
And this is Matt Rausch. And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast. Stick around. Our next segment coming up, we're going to be talking to my old boss, Rich Homburg. Well, not old. My former boss, Rich Homburg.
Yeah, he's kind of old, though.
Well, yeah. that's one of the things we could hit him with later. We're going to be talking about the STEMinista Project, an effort here in Detroit to get more girls involved in STEM careers.
It's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Well, what we had hoped is that Rich Homburg would be phoning in, and he may still do so. He's the president of Detroit Public Television, but we certainly can talk about what's going on.
Yes, with the STEMinista project that Detroit Public Television is involved in, along with the Michigan Science Center. It's an event coming up March 4th. It's intended to introduce middle school girls to science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yes, and they're going to be a big program in the morning. I know I got invited. I'm not sure if I'll be able to make it. Friday is kind of a tough day for me, but maybe Mr. Matt can make it. But it's going to be at the – are they there? Oh, we got them. Okay, good.
Hey, Rich, you there?
Oh.
Mr. Homburg.
Hey.
Calling hi. Mr. Homburg.
All right.
Who's this?
This is Matt Roush. Rich, Rich, how are you? It's Matt Roush.
Is Brendan on the call, too?
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
He's here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're...
You do this together.
Yes, we're finally doing something together instead of competing.
And how's LTU treating
you? Oh, really well. I absolutely love it. It's, you know, I get to talk to really smart college professors and cool students and tell their stories. It's really rough duty, let me tell you.
Cool.
By the way, we're live on the radio right now.
We're
so,
live on the
yes,
internet.
Yes. we can catch up later. But right now, let's talk about the program that you've got coming up on Friday. I love this show. You never know what's going to happen on live radio, right? So, but we have the Michigan Science Center. You guys are involved in that. You're going to be streaming that. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, we've been doing a lot of work with the Michigan Science Center. Tanya Matthews is the new head of the Science Center, or not so new at this point. Nothing beats a Duke-trained engineer running a museum. She runs that place spectacularly. And she's started a project called STEMinistas, it has to do with girls in STEM, and we sat down and talked to her and looked at an opportunity we thought was important as well. We've got lots of credibility in the education community and really good relationships with a large audience, and we said, well, what if we bring our audience and to your place and create an event? And so sat down and talked about leaders, and they're going to be talking to a variety of leaders, and mostly there'll be a number of women not involved initially, but I think this will go well beyond just sort of simply STEMinistas, but I think Tanya loves that idea, and it's a good place to start. And obviously, there's lots of interest in STEM and the importance of STEM, particularly in at-risk communities, particularly with girls. So we're off and running, and we're going to stream the event on Friday, and then we think we can build a nice initiative out of that and bring in a lot of – there's an awful lot of firepower in this town around that topic, as you well know. And both on the need side, there's a need to get girls further up to speed on this issue, also all students. But also on the opportunity side, is there a town that would be better to talk about STEM in than the automotive capital of the world and one of the most important cities on the Great Lakes? And there's enough technology firepower in this town to really fuel something here. So we're off and running, and with a lot of things we do, find a smart place to start, dig in, do some work, form some partnerships, and go. That's sort of us.
Well, and of course, this is for girls between 4th and 8th grade. We had Tanya on the show here, about a month ago, I guess?
Yeah, about a month.
And she was explaining the program for girls 4th through 8th grade. They're trying to get them exposed to the idea that, being a nerd is not so bad, you know, because that's a tough age in science, technology, engineering, math, and now they include the arts in there. You know, it's just something maybe those girls aren't even thinking about at that age. And this program gets them exposed to it, gets some hands-on experience with it. Wonderful science center to work in. I think it's a really great idea.
Especially, I think, connecting the girls to leaders and role models. And, you know, there's something about making it real and getting face-to-face. We're doing a lot of work around connected learning, sort of how do you get students face-to-face, hands-on experience with the topic. Last summer we partnered with a bunch of organizations around this connected learning initiative, and we expect to continue that. Again, we always let it, for us, we're almost always the Air Force to the armies of people trying to help kids or trying to help work on an issue in our city. And what we found is if we stick with it, we can carve out a pretty good position there of service to the town. So on we march.
Now, the program, I think, I'm looking at the media advisory right here, runs from 8 to 10 in the morning. Is that when you're going to be streaming, from 8 to 10?
Yeah. We'll stream it then, and then we'll push out email and social media to all kinds of stakeholders. You know, so much of what we do sort of goes beyond the television show. We 10 years ago, PBS was a system of great shows, and today it's a system of great shows and lots of outreach around that. And so we built a very strong engagement plan with teachers and scientists and related organizations and everybody from the Girl Scouts to the United Way to the ISDs. It really is all about taking great quality content, but also connecting it and building that database, using the platforms, using the technology to be able to further the story.
And I know other people that are going to be involved. In fact, I interviewed Major General Bingham back during the auto show. She's a wonderful woman, first woman to actually head up TACOM.
Terrific.
You got Jill Ford, the head of the city's innovation and entrepreneurship initiatives. You got Diane Aston. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Aston Shin?
I think I'll go with your pronunciation.
Okay, we'll go with that. She's the human resources operations at DTE Energy, so there's a heavyweight there. You got Susan Smith, the chief science officer at General Motors. That's good. And, of course, yourself, Tanya, and Linda Blair, who's the vice president and chief of the business unit she's the Michigan president for ITC, the big transmission holding company that puts out all the power lines and hooks up with the wind farms that are up in the thumb and all the rest. So that's quite a lineup.
Yeah, I've become pretty good buddies I've never known a general before that you could call Gwen.
Yeah.
She's just terrific. She runs TACOM and has really done a terrific amount of outreach. There's an installation with 8,000 employees. Most people think of it as tank command, and it's really more about logistics today and the very technical operation of getting things to soldiers. And along comes General Bingham, and she asked that some members of the community get together with them and help them tell their story a little better. They have a very important story to tell that's important to about 8,000 jobs here. And we've been meeting with them for 2 or 3 years. There's a group of us, and we go out there about 4 times a year, and we talk about stories and how to storyfy all that is going on at TACOM and how to help develop relationships. And very complementary to our automotive business. We know how important cars are. The importance of the industry in military defense terms is very important, and a lot of important jobs. And TACOM likes talking about Detroit, and Detroit should like talking about TACOM. Good people. And so that was typical of Glenn Bingham, of the general, is that was a one-call close. I called her, and we called her and said, could you do this? And she said, certainly. And so she's a great role model.
And, of course, they have the National Automotive Center out there where they try to take technologies that are used in the automotive industry where you have economies of scale and see if they can be applied to the military to see if we can bring down the military costs for trucks and Jeeps and all the rest of the vehicles that they use. So wonderful things happening out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so a good place for us to be. But I think it's the same theme for us over and over again. So how do we use this resource of Detroit Public Television in more and more different ways? How do we relentlessly sort of stay at the table as a partner? And obviously, Dr. Matthews is a good place to start.
And now, I don't know if this is open to the public or just invite only. Do you know?
It is invite only at this point. But if someone's listening to this podcast or this radio show and wants to come to send me a note and we'll see what we can do.
All right, we'll fix them right up. So, and again, you guys are going to be streaming it. We will pick up that. We will link to wherever, I guess it's dptv.org, and we'll make sure that folks, if they want to watch it online or however they want, it's going to be, instead of be available on demand afterwards, right?
Oh, sure. Yep, absolutely.
So we'll make sure they'll be able to do that.
And what hours is that going to be on Friday?
8 to 10.
Okay. All right. And are they going to have some of the, I know they've identified, you know, over 100 women as, you know, being high-tech sort of role models for the Detroit area. Are they going to be speaking, or what's actually going to be happening?
A number of them will be presenting on Friday, and there's a presentation with some of the young girls talking about them as well.
Okay, cool.
All right, and so in case anybody wonders who we've been talking to here, We've been talking to Rich Homburg. Still have about 4 minutes left. So why don't we talk a little bit about what's happening with DPTV? Gosh, you've been out there. How long has it been now? 5, 6 years?
About 8 years. According to LinkedIn, it's like 8 years today, I guess. Because I got all, you know, we get all these instant thank yous now or congratulations now from folks. I've been here about 8 years, and it's amazing. I mean, you guys in the tech business, it's amazing how different television is today and all that's going on. And the ability to obviously be on so many platforms, it's a little daunting at times, trying to get to all the places people want us to be. But the biggest difference I see is we used to make shows, and now we have big, important shows, but also a continuing conversation around issues and more and smarter ways to connect the shows. There's a terrific new executive producer at Frontline, young woman, Irene Aronson, and where Frontline was always into big, important hours of television, that continues, but now also a sense of how you feed the web, how you reach new audiences, how you make Frontline a little more, if you will, approachable or put it in more places. The biggest change I think you see in public television is that sense that it's not just shows, but initiatives and important areas of concern. And so if you look at how we knit together shows and how we knit together ideas, and, you know, today you're producing a show, but you're also thinking about lots of platforms and social media and what's the messaging. And it's kind of a fun arena to play in right now. And, you know, television business is changing pretty considerably. And as Matt will, I think, agree, so is the radio business.
Right.
And, you know, we find ourselves spending a lot of time outside of the building, a lot of time trying to understand where this community needs us. I always start with, so, you know, we're the public media guys. So there's a really good version of Dancing with the Stars that's on Channel 7. If they're doing that well, we should be doing the other things. So where we used to talk about cooking or travel, today we're talking about the environment. We're talking about our role with kids and our preschool initiative. And on and on. But where does the world need us? You may have noticed we recently announced a major initiative with Michigan State University, where we're planning to build a 24/7 children's channel for Detroit. And you know, that came about through lots of work with Michigan State, and then sitting down with them face to face and saying, "What could we do together? And how could we build this something important together? You folks are really interested in Detroit, us too." You've got a great school of ed, you got a great school of social sciences, you got a great communication school. What if we challenged ourselves? And they very quickly stepped up, and we're now working with the provost on planning. Georgianne Herbert, who Matt knows well, is leading the relationship building there. So,
I know when you first joined Detroit Public Television, wasn't the big thing digital broadcasting, and you were going to be able to do essentially three television stations at once. Now with the internet, you can do a million of them, right? I mean, that's sort of where video is going.
We'll end up with a children's channel. We talk, you know, the idea of a channel, you know, lots of people watching Netflix out there, but lots of people also sitting down to watch an evening's worth of television. You kind of have to be, you know, Ryan Stelter said, that well-known media type who works for CNN said, you know, PBS is bringing it all together, exactly what they should do. A channel on demand and streaming it with this new kids channel. And he's exactly right that today some people need a channel 24/7 and some people want to pick a particular show. And then some people want apps and games to go along with it. And the recent announcement from PBS about partnering with us on this is spectacular because it approaches all of those.
All right. Unfortunately, Rich, we're running out of time in this segment, but thanks so much for being with us today. His name is Rich Homburg, and he is president of Detroit Public Television. And for another week, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast. This will be available shortly online at SoundCloud, iTunes, and other outlets. And join us again next Monday at 3 p.m. for another fun-filled hour of Michigan technology.
See you then.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.